One-fifth of adults in the United States have a mental illness, which makes them a lot more vulnerable to police violence. In fact, they're 16 times more likely to be killed during police encounter compared to others without mental health issues. So, when these people are in crisis or need help, who should they turn to? And how is our crisis response system taking care of them? That's the Checkup's question for today. I'm Lizzie McGreevy, Community Engagement Specialist with Side Effects Public Media, and with me is Ryan Levy, producer with the health policy news organization Trade-Offs.
Hey there, Lizzie.
Hi, Ryan. So you just produced a series called The Fifth Branch, and it's looking at the crisis response system and how it responds to people with mental illness. Can you tell us what is the fifth branch in this case?
Yeah, so most people are familiar with the standard four branches of public safety, right? You've got 911 answering the call, and then police, fire, or EMS responding. But there are a lot of reasons that people call 911 that aren't good fits for police, fire, or EMS. So the idea of the fifth branch is a different type of response that 911 can send out. So this would be unarmed mental health workers who can respond to nonviolent 911 calls involving things like mental health, homelessness, and addiction.
So unarmed crisis response teams, that's not really a new concept. It's been around since the 1980s here in the U.S., but for some reason, it feels like there hasn't been like a huge real commitment to this mission. And I say that because we hear time and time again about police killing people going through mental health crises. Can you talk about what your reporting found in terms of the challenges the concept of non-police response is facing?
Absolutely. You know, to many people, this is just a radical idea. You know, sending someone other than a cop, firefighter, or a paramedic to a 911 call just doesn't compute for some folks. You know, is it safe to send unarmed civilians to 911 calls? I will say the evidence so far strongly suggests that it is. And of course, you know, trying to stand up a whole new public safety branch takes a lot of resources. But I will say we are seeing more cities take this on. You have these programs in more than 100 communities across the country, including more than half of the country's largest cities having some kind of unarmed 911 response.
I am excited to say that here in Indianapolis, which is where WFII is, the city did launch a new crisis response team made up of clinicians. That's called Clinician-Led Community Response here in Indianapolis. And that started a year ago, so July 2023. So happy birthday, CLCR. So a lot of places have a form of this crisis response team, like you said, but it kind of feels patchworky. How do we measure the performance or the success of these programs?
Most of these programs are just a few years old, and a lot of them still have limited hours or only cover certain parts of town. So that's all to say, this is still small, this is still new. The main metric that most cities use so far to kind of measure their success is how many calls they've diverted from police, you know, removing that chance for an arrest or a violent police interaction. Other metrics that could tell us more are, you know, what impact these programs are having on things like arrest rates, police use of force, access to long-term treatment. But those are a lot harder to tease out and study because there's just a lot of things that can impact those. So researchers are doing that work right now in Durham and a few other cities, but that's going to take a little more time, and hopefully we'll know more about these other impacts soon.
So the full series of The Fifth Branch is out now, and you take us to Durham, North Carolina. You wrote along 911 calls, shadowed the staff, the whole nine yards. Why did you choose Durham, and what is something that really stuck with you as you were doing this kind of reporting?
Yeah, so I mean, picking Durham, it's one of the most robust programs in the country alongside places like Denver, Albuquerque, and Eugene, Oregon. And they were willing to give us a lot of access, you know, all that access that you mentioned. You know, one thing that stood out was just how people responded to this different kind of response. You know, I sat with people, with multiple people who were reduced to tears because they felt cared for in a way that they just never had before by a first responder. On the other side, though, it also became clear in my time there, you know, just kind of how limited this fifth branch is and the limits of what they can do for people. because people have, you know, the folks they're interacting with have a lot of needs, you know, food, money, housing, mental health care. And all of that is in short supply. And I think it just shows how big the needs are, how many gaps there still are in our social safety net, and the limits, at least now, to how big of an impact these types of programs can make.
Ryan, thank you so much for this wonderful information. You can listen to all three episodes of The Fifth Branch now and learn more about the series at tradeoffs.org/The Fifth Branch. If you listeners have subjects or questions for the checkup, let us know and we'll cover it soon. Until next time, stay safe.